Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Folks, recently, you may recall, we took a trip to Los Angeles with our guest Claudia Lano to chat about season 3, episode 14 of Sex and the City. That was Sex in Another City. But the trip to LA is really a two-parter. That was actually the second half. Today, we're going back and covering the first half of that LA journey. So this is season 3, episode 13 of Sex and the City, Escape from New York. And there's nobody I'd rather escape from New York with, nobody I'd rather go on a girls' trip with to keep me company while Matthew McConaughey is destroying my dreams and everybody's shaming me for smoking. And that is today's guest. She is the writer-performer of several award-winning solo plays. You've seen her on Hacks, Abbott Elementary, Arrested Development, Hung, Looking, and so much more. Lauren Weedman, hello.
Hello, Matt. You really mean that? Like, so if Bette Midler wanted to go to New York or LA with you, you'd still be like, I don't know if you've seen this lady on Abbott. Like, you truly, that's a big, I shouldn't fight it. Thank you. I'll learn how to take a compliment.
I mean, also, maybe all three of us could go together, but if I had to choose, you're going to win.
Yeah. Well, I could do more getting around than Bette could, I think. Not because we're age, just because I know LA. But where's the two-parter? The LA one is a two-parter in Sex and the City?
Yeah, so after this episode, they do another episode in LA.
Oh my God. Oh no, I really want to
and we're jumping all over in time, back and forth. Yeah. Time means absolutely nothing.
Totally,
on this podcast,
dude.
Or
totally.
In life, you know what I mean?
Totally fucking, yeah. I get it, dude.
Yeah. So it sounds like when it comes to like your level of fandom of Sex and the City, it feels like you're kind of like a meat and potatoes down the middle kind of gal.
Well, I'm not,
accurate?
Yes, but I have to say that I'm that way about, like, I get obsessive and then I sort of, but when Sex and the City was on, I watched it. I was living in New York at the time and I liked it. But I wasn't like, I remember I was on The Daily Show and I did a piece about the Sex and the City obsession and we went to a bar where everybody got together when they're airing an episode where everybody watched it together. And I felt the same way as when I go into a sports bar where I'm like, wow, people really like this, huh? Like they're obsessed. Like these are really, it brings them out. And I'm always a little bit of like, whatever's super popular. I'm like, whatever, a little like sample of it. But I was watching it back gave me complete, like what a comforting show. Like
yes.
I got such a like, oh wow, I'd forgotten that it was, that seems like a simpler, gentler time of the world. And so I'm a fan, but the biggest one that I was like, perhaps I have no right to step into your home is that I did not watch the reboot. And I know that may like make people like, why'd you let her on, Matt?
Not at all. I actually respect you more for it in a way.
Why?
No, I'm kidding. But was it an act of protest or you just didn't get to it?
I didn't get to it because of, it's also the real thing is this thing. Oh, it's so boring. I'll save the boring stuff for when I start journaling again. But it's because of like the single mom thing of being super busy. And then when I was watching it, you know, it was disturbing. I wanted to watch it because I was so disturbed by people commenting on the aging thing where people are like, yeah, wow, they certainly have. And that's been my life, you know, recently is I've been busy aging, busy. And that idea of everybody commenting on you and that being a part of it, talk about your appearance, makes me sick. And so that wasn't why I wasn't like, I'm not going to watch it. Do they really look old? Like, forget it. It wasn't that, but I was, that I just remember being bothered by that. That did not affect why I didn't watch it though. I auditioned, no, they tried to, I had some, I think I had one audition, but they wanted to do a local hire. Like my agent's always like, would you be willing to come to New York for this? And I'm like, absolutely, for that show, yes. But I didn't obviously, I watched a little bit of it last night because I wanted to see them, to see what they, of how they, what they, I wanted to see them, what the vibe was of it.
What did you catch?
I caught right the beginning. I just saw season, first season, episode two of the, of him dying, of the death.
Ah.
And then I was like, oh, they went there? Like, it's not nearly as like hitting the jokes all the time, right? It's a bit more content or a bit more depth to it.
Yeah. Their first season is really like a grief season, which was divisive, but I loved it.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I liked it more than I thought I was going to, I should say. That I was like, oh, this is really, and this is dealing with this really well. And still has like the snazzy do, like gay sensibilities as well of the humor.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I had to check because I was like, was Lauren ever in Sex and the City? Or it you do belong in that world somehow.
No, because I'm glamorous. Like, I'm glamorous.
Yes, and, you are.
Yeah, I have lots of, just my wealth. No, I don't feel like I am. I feel like, well, no, acting wise, I feel like when I saw some of the women at the funeral, I was like, I'm playing all these sort of, I just played like a New York Times reporter with the heavy glasses and the, that everyone's a little frightened of. And they, so yeah, I felt like I could, but anyway, that's the story of my life. I'm always like, could have been on that show. But I'm
season three, they're working on it right now.
Are
I'm
they
sure
really?
They're writing the Lauren Weedman role.
Oh, I got it. That's, wow, you're really being nice to me. I'm not sure what's in this for you, but oh, your podcast. But I'm just, but Michael Patrick King too. I saw him the other night doing Uncabaret.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah. I've seen him throughout the, also realizing the, God, is this supposed to be this self-absorbed? I want to talk about the show, but like I also watching it, realizing like, oh, I did a show with John Corbett. I worked with him on a, it was all very like, I was having these, the people whose, my life is intersect, my career is intersected with a lot of people who worked on that show. And like with John and with Michael Patrick King, like doing other shows of his or testing for pilots that he's done and stuff. So that part was just very, you know, selfishly like, you know, fun to think about or remember.
Yeah, that, and that's what I mean. It just feels like sensibility-wise, you belong. I'm sure they're all fans of yours. Knowing Michael Patrick King as well as I do, having interviewed him 2.5 times.
Oh, a halftime? What happened to halftime? Oh, I was like, did he leave in the middle? What a queen.
That does sound like him. No, I had to share it with somebody else. So I counted it as a halftime.
He's
but
scary.
He's my best friend as far as I'm concerned. But he's I do not wish to cross him.
Oh, no, you don't. I know I know people, I feel like I'd say this to his face. I wouldn't, I'm frightened of him. But I know a couple of people who've worked with him who are still like in therapy because of it. They're just like, you do not want to make him mad. And when I was in, I did Two Broke Girls, right?
Yeah.
That show he did. And I wanted to leave. They do this thing when they're doing like a multi-cam where you're supposed to come out like a play at the end of it. And they, you bow. And then they introduce you one at a time. And you're supposed to like come out and like give a, and in my mind, cause I was the guest star, I was like, nobody gives a shit. We've got Jennifer Coolidge and all these other people. I'm like in one little scene. I played like a PR for whatever. I'm like, I don't want to. So I'm trying to sneak out and Jennifer Coolidge stopped me. And she's like, you can't go. You can't go. You have to stay, Michael. I can't do a good Jennifer. She was like, you gotta go. She's, I could do better if I didn't have coffee. I'm like the opposite, better before. But he was like, she was like, you can't go. He'll get mad. He doesn't like it. He likes you to stay. You're going to have to, you got to let him know. You got to thank him. Let him know you're grateful for being, which is true for everybody. I should always do that. But I remember I was like, yeah. Whoa, I definitely dodged a bullet. But I'm really glad I stayed because when I, and gave some extra, like you have to like, which you should do. It's good.
Of course.
But I realized I probably would never, I wouldn't be able to perform on gay cruises and stuff like that. He'd have me blacklisted if I...
He'd have you banned, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he listens to this podcast sometimes, so...
Why didn't you tell me that before I started bashing on him? Why did I should
listen,
have started...
He's... Can you imagine the things that people have said about this show on this podcast? especially about the reboot. He's heard some stuff.
He has? He listens to it to get like feedback about it? He wants to know?
You know, he says that he stops listening anytime people start like theorizing about what might happen because he doesn't want that to get into his head.
Right, right.
Basically, he doesn't want us to come and sue him later if something we predict is going to happen happens and we try to claim that we wrote it or something. You know, I don't know.
Right, right, right. No, that makes sense because he could steal storylines.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I just want to say what a icon he is and how much I enjoy working with him. And I look forward to our next project.
Thank you. There, we'll cut everything prior to this and pick up right there.
Yeah. Dead. This town dead.
Uh-huh. I mean, we're going to go through the episode, but as we go, I mean, I mostly want to talk about you and sort of use all these little beats as just an excuse to get Lauren Weedman stories. But, you know, I'm wondering what you've experienced that parallels. Like, okay, so we kick off with Carrie announcing that she's going to L.A., production company's interested in optioning her column. I'm assuming you had some early in your career heartbreaks or humiliations that this reminded you of.
God, so many, Matt, that I don't even, like, the idea of the scene with her and Matthew McConaughey, which is so great anyway. It's so like, it's so like behind the scenes of Me Too. It's so his crotch in her face, basically, with his leg up there. Like, I've never had that. I didn't get sexually harassed. And I know this is really controversial. I never was sexually harassed. It's kind of and I know, again, it's an awful thing, but I did always feel like, why not me? But I didn't put out enough and actually that's a theme of the show too, right? When Cynthia Nixon's character, what the hell? I'm blanking. God, people.
Miranda.
They're like, you really aren't. What do you do? You don't even know her name. Miranda, when she's talking about how she loves LA, how people are putting out their sexuality more honest about what they want, you know, and people are, you know, and that is so how I remember auditioning in New York when I first got there and always going out for lesbian roles. And I didn't mind it at all, but I was like, why is it always that? Like, there's never a part. I never auditioned for a part where a man likes me or is in love with me. They're either frightened of me or I'm, you know, or I touch them and the guy's like, oh God, she touched me. You know, like I'm always that person. And he was like, well, I think it's because you don't really give off a sexual energy and you seem really smart. And I was like, I'll tell the lesbians that too. But so I never go through like the sexual harassment stuff because I was so making sure. But that the embarrassment part of things of people blowing smoke so hard up your ass. And then when you get there, they make it all about them. Like, well, you think it's like, you're going there to like pitch a show. And I can't remember. I had like a book that was optioned and I would go in to have meetings with like, I don't know, people in Imagine Television and stuff. And then they'd end up showing you other pilots while you were there that they really like that had nothing to do with you. It's not like they were trying to inspire you. They're just like, look what I just bought. You know, my wife has a pet pig and we're thinking about doing a whole series about her adventures, Beverly Hills pet pig. And just sitting there like, oh, it's still like as it isn't everywhere. People are just talking about themselves and it's not really about you really start to think you're special. Like I'm being brought out because I saw something. I'm like, yeah, they saw something, but really it's still, but yeah, it happens all that, but I don't know what happens in episode 2 and I don't remember. I guess you can tell me. What do you say? Don't tell me about, does she end up really getting heartbroken about it?
You want me to spoil it?
Well, do you want? Yeah.
Well, the book is kind of closed on the adaptation at the end of it, by the end of this episode.
Right.
In the next episode, she has a fling with Vince Vaughn.
And oh, God.
He introduces himself as like a high-rolling agent.
Oh,
and
perfect.
And he like sweeps her off like a fancy car, takes her to this amazing house. And at the very end, they're waking up in bed and Carrie Fisher, playing herself, walks in and starts yelling at him, and we realize he's actually her assistant, and he's house-sitting for her. And it's great. It's great. It's just, you know, these two episodes back-to-back are just like chef's kiss. But, I mean, obviously accomplished a lot since time in your life that we're talking about. But, like, when it comes to managing hopes and expectations when a new big opportunity comes up now, knowing
God.
Everything you know, how do you handle it?
I'm just so cynical. I mean, to the point where I really feel like, hey, I've gotten to the age where nobody want, if you're to the age where nobody does want to have sex with you and you can't make them money, you're not a new thing, they could give a shit. I'm basically like, my joke, God, everything I'm saying is like so borderline offensive. Anyway, but I'm like, don't drown me in the river. I'll try to be worth something in my aging. Like, let me be a mentor and teacher now that I'm, you know, 55, almost 55. Might as well start practicing that. And still all these people in LA don't say their age. So that, what I just did was a really radical political move.
But when
I,
brave.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel shaky. This show though, when I watched it once and I watched it a couple more times, cause I was like, I want to make sure it's in me. So I didn't know how, like, if you were going to be like, can you believe the sofa in the third scene? I didn't know how like obsessive you got on it. You're like, I love every detail. But the vibe of LA, how the whole, like the shallowness, the dumbness, the sexuality first, it's true. There's a real part of that city that does not, that's still there, that makes you sick. It gave me like a major, not major. I wasn't like, you know, drinking myself to sleep. I was more, I regret coming here. Like I have moments of like, what did I do? Why did I leave? And that show completely brought me back to that deep regret of like, cause people are always like, Lauren, you're so New York. Like whenever I feel like I'm giving an opinion on something where I'm just like, I hate that parking lot. It's awful to park. They're like, whoa, New Yorker. But they're strong opinions. You know, or that I'm, or whatever. If I'm like, I was reading a book, and they're like, "Whoa, book reader!" They don't say it like that, but it's, but that the shallowness of it all, and the sort of the personality. Everyone's special, and they think they're. You don't have any good conversations. I found little places, but man, I was like, it just reminded me of, wow, I made that choice. I chose the ocean over theater. So I thought they did a good job. And that Miranda thing was very, that hit me hard too. That was a personally like a, oh my God, that's how I always think too, where I'm like, how will I ever compete with how they put, like dating here, dating is awful in LA. And the show reminded me of that too, about how, like, how can I compete with what men, I mean, I can, I don't mean I can, I mean, I'm not insecure, but it's a real thing. Just the sexuality and youth and sex and the dumbness and that guy. Okay, sorry, I'm all over the place. I'll let you.
No, please
reel it in, because I'm thinking that guy who's like, I'm like other things. The dude with his, who's the dildo model.
Oh yeah,
I have.
Yeah,
I have,
that reminded me so. Yes, I dated a few of him. Not actual dildo model, but I dated a guy. When I was like 21, had just moved to LA, I met a guy at the gym, and I was this like just scrawny, nerdy, you know, had just gotten my braces off. And this guy that literally looked like Superman. I hadn't seen a body like this in real life before, like chatted me up at the gym. And I was so deeply confused, and we started hanging out. And I remember the first time that we started that we like kissed, him taking my hand like so slowly and meaningfully and placing it on his
crotch.
Abs.
Oh, his abs.
Not his crotch, his abs. Just literally like he was like, I know you've never felt anything like this. And it was just silently, a silent gesture. I was like, thank you, I guess. Thank you. And anyway, I just brought
sure
up because
he wasn't hungry. He wasn't like, did you feel my tummy grumble? I'm hungry.
Yeah.
He's like a
maybe
simple
that's
child.
What he was trying to say.
That is, I had the very similar, it's so funny because I was just divorced and I had God, I'm always dating. Anyway, my life is like stuck in the city. I had two dates when I first got to LA, and one was with, I shouldn't say he's a known person, but he's not going to watch, Peter Billingsley. And then the other one was with this guy and these are just dates off the internet, who also, he walked in. I'd never seen a guy like that in person who had cap teeth and feathered hair. And he had a body that he like is totally chiseled. And I was like,
yeah,
this is a joke, right? And he, as we got to know each other, and he was really, I remember too, he drank his wine. Like we got some wine and he took his wine and he guzzled it down and he goes, and he finished it and he goes, oh my God, it's thirsty. And I was like, oh, this is different. This is different. And then he was, we talked about our different, I just was on The Daily Show and I was talking about that. And he had done in his career, he'd done softcore porn. And he'd done these, he was never naked. He was the one, he was always clothed. And I saw one of them where he's clothed and he's surrounded by these naked women and they're all in a naked Miss America contest. And he's got one line and his line is, "Ladies, ladies, you're all beautiful." And that's it. and he was like proud of the fact he had. And I remember I was just like this show. I sat there feeling so judgmental of like, what is this? Like, this is the most this is not the theater. This is not TV film. This, what? Like, this is a part of, I guess, the industry, I guess, just the really not very deep, very, and it was so, it gave me such like, and I met his other softcore porn people, friends, who were all just like, "You're gorgeous." All they did was talk about me and my appearance. "You're gorgeous. I love this. Look at that. Look at her legs. Look at those ankles." I was like, "Please enjoy also my tiny wrists." Like, I was like, "Here, what can I offer you?" Like, it truly was like a very looks based, and that's not like, I was, you know, I'm like Cassavetes. I want some real shit. I want some, so yeah, that feeling, God, man. That's a real part of LA that is still here.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. And I think that, the guy that I'm thinking of later, we were in bed and he opened up to me that his like bank job wasn't his real passion. And I was like, "Oh, you're an actor." And he was like, "Actually, I'm a singer-songwriter." And then just unprompted launched into song.
See?
In bed.
This is the scene.
Just like Garth, yeah.
Yes, I've had it too, where suddenly somebody, for me, it was mostly, I'll be in the after sex or mid, not mid sex usually, after sex, they're like, "Hey, can I show you this short film I just did?" Mm. And what, that's how I broke up with, actually, that's how I broke up with the guy with the "Ladies, ladies, you're all beautiful." Mm-hmm. I went to his house and he wanted to show me something. It's a short film. And the very first scene, it's a guy getting ready for a date and he's really nervous. And the girl comes to the door and the shot is, he looks, you see him look up at her eyes, look down at her boobs. Wow, wow, wow. Up at the eyes, down at the boobs. Wow, wow. And I got up and I had such an adrenaline rush. I didn't know how to speak. And I just got up and I go, "I have to go." And he goes, "Are you kidding?" And I'm like, "I'm sorry, I have to go." And I kept walking. And I remember thinking, "Say something." And I couldn't even think what to say because whatever I was going to say was going to sound mean and snooty. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to fake it. Now I can fake it. Now I can be like, "Oh my God, I love that you did it all yourself. Where'd you shoot it?" Like, I've learned how to sort of, you know, not give out my opinion. So, you know, they can see it in my eyes sometimes. But I try to hide it. And I remember I got in my car and he was in the street going like, "What's going on? What's going on?" Because I just drove away. And I was like, "I'm so lonely here." I had to turn on NPR and, you know, masturbate all night to it. which is hard in the evening because they don't have a good program.
Yeah. You just had to get back to yourself.
Yeah, but I've dated many of those kind of people. Anyway, those people, yeah. They don't have a right to life. Bless their hearts.
Bless them. You know, we can move on from this, but I'm just thinking about like Carrie being brought to LA and the promise of this big project and getting kind of like sucked into that. And I feel like, I mean, I've lived here 23 years or something like that. And I feel like I've gone through these very clear, like psychological stages where the first one was just like one person casually mentions an opportunity and I'm like, "I've made it." Like, this is it. Here we go. And then, of course, when you realize that's not how it works, it then fully cynical, nothing is going to work out. And then out of desperation, starting to get into self-help and spiritual woo-woo that sort of teaches you that that attitude is what's deflecting it. And then you're like, "Oh, fuck. Okay, so do I have to start deluding myself again into believing that everything is going to work out? Or is everything going to work out?" And so I'm sort of there now.
Matt, you just gave me a breakthrough. I don't remember you being this deep. I don't think I've been kind to people in the past. I think I've seen everybody around me as being... I'm like surrounded by dummies, apparently, is my title of my next book, because that's so true. I never thought of it that way, because it's exactly that, where you start to doubt yourself and you want to save yourself from suicidal depression because you're like, "I thought I was," because it's that whole thing like this. Was it Oprah who said to Maya Angelou, or did Maya Angelou say it to Oprah? I don't remember. But one of them said to the other one, like, you know, "It's not about you, Oprah," or "It's not about you, Maya." Mm-hmm. That everything people say is not about, and even them liking you is not about you. It's like, "I found somebody." Like I found it's their own ego thinking that they, and you, I've had that many times, like the word they've, well, we all have out here where people suddenly get excited about you. And then when you doesn't work out, you're like, I'm, it turns out I'm a failure. You're right. Sorry. I wanted to think it through again. I want to repeat what you just said, cause it's so true. And then it makes you dumber. Cause you're like, I will surround myself in this, you know, whatever, like trying to,
yeah.
Instead of just working and seeing the real situation. Oh God, that's really true.
But where are you now in that arc?
That I want to get away from working with others as much as possible. I want to self-produce and I want to like, or realizing what I'm working with, realizing what the deal is, like not being so, I think I definitely, you think that they hold the keys to the kingdom because they kind of do. And there's so much money. They're all just like sitting on all, to me, it was always like, just let me in, give me some of that money. Because there's just so much, yeah, money out there. And that's, I wanted to access that to take, because I work anyway, I'm going to keep writing stuff and keep doing stuff. It might sort of like, I wrote another play, I wrote, you know, and book stuff that doesn't really always go to anything big money. And I'll just think, so I'll keep doing it no matter what. But then, I don't know, I feel like, I lost my train of thought with it, because I was going to complain, and then I realized it's, what I've gotten to, let's see if I can be clear, is that I guess I don't, I see it more as the business of it. And I'm not great at the business, as people always say. All the sensitive artists are like, I'm not good at business. To save us, but I'm aware of that and that I didn't come at it the right way. I wish I'd been more like, I never went in and said, this is how it's gonna go. I didn't go, I've got this thing, I'm looking to do this, I want this kind of person to work with. Instead, I was like, I had this one idea, and whatever you think I should do and where you think I should sit and what I should wear, I'd love to do that. Any notes? Like just so, you know what I mean? Not coming in with a strong enough,
yeah.
Like always hoping. I have like a montage in my head of all the people that loved me at one point that it didn't go anywhere. Ellen Ball would like to meet with you. Michael Patrick Caine looked at your script. Like, you know, all these, they love you. They love you. And then my favorite thing with my old agent, the older, used to be that I'd call him. And every time I called him, there was this crazy thing where he was always in the middle of a meeting about how much he loved me. Always. I just always happened to meet him. He's like, Lauren, Weeds, we just were talking. They were just talking about how much they love you. So funny you call Weeds. We were just saying, you're my favorite, most talented client. I don't know anybody like you. She's an extraordinary talent. And I was like, wait a second. You have that many meetings about how much you love me? Or just the bullshit of that. And so now I'm definitely cynical, but you can't call them out on it. I've learned that too. They don't like to be called out on, like,
yeah.
Right? You got to act like you're one of them.
You
got
to act like you believe it.
Yeah, which that part,
although
too.
Although I do believe that he had that many meetings where he talked about how much he loved you.
I don't think that is true. I don't think that is true at all. That's such a like, oh my God, Weidman, they love you. That word love too, the amount of love that, and then we're all like so many divorced single people whose dreams didn't happen. And they're like, but there was so much love. Remember what? That's the other thing. I'm dating people my age now. There are a lot of people in the business who are all just so bitter, right? Because these things didn't happen and that guy got in my way. Or this, you know, so that, you know. Anyway, back to Sex and the City and good clothes.
Oh, back to Sex and the City. Oh, so, you know, we're off to LA pretty early in the episode. We get to the Standard Hotel, complete with the model in the fish tank. This is right around the time that I moved here, and it really captures a moment in time for me. What were you in the early aughts? Were you
I got
fresh
here
to LA?
Same, I think I got here. I came like 2003, I think 2002, 2003.
Okay, yeah.
And it was the time where I remember I joined a gym. I was living in Laurel Canyon with a gay couple, and we used to go to Crunch, which is a gym down Sunset. And there were guys, I remember I was signing up for the membership, and they showed like guys in like silhouette or something. I think they're in the shower maybe. Like, could it be that?
Yes.
Am I making that up? Or I was just like, I'm in a parody. Everything felt like a Fellini film of like, what? Like, that's for real?
The actual showers, the real showers were very visible when you walked in, and they were in.
You could see the outlines.
As soon as you could see the outlines of the people actually showering. Yeah,
and they're and just fucking each other. Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, I think that's crazy to even come up with that. Do like your bodies always show. Yeah, so I was here at that time period of that. It felt very of that time as well. I don't think they do that.
Folks, sunnier days are a-coming. Summer's right around the corner. We're all on our wellness journeys, and I can think of no better way to kickstart your new healthy routine than with Factor Meals. And right now, if you go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use our code likematt50, you'll get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription's active. So with Factor Meals, there are 35 different meal options, more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you've always got new flavors to explore. You can make your day delicious from breakfast to dessert, everything in between. You'll stay fueled with easy, nutritious options. I'm talking filet mignon. I'm talking shrimp. I'm talking blackened salmon. And Factor Meals are ready in 2 minutes, so no shopping, no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. Head to factormeals.com right now. Go to factormeals.com/likematt50 and use code likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code likematt50 at factormeals.com/likematt50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. You know, one of the many, many things I have in common with our Lord and Savior Oprah Winfrey is that I love bread. I do. I love it. It's my favorite thing. When they drop that basket on the table at a restaurant, I light up, I dive in, and then I go, oh no, don't have too many. What am I going to do? Because the carb fear can be very real. But luckily, Hero Bread is here with those same delicious favorites, but free of consequences or compromises, because they have remade carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT, you'll get 10% off your order. So whether your health goals are getting enough fiber or cutting down on sugar or adding more protein, or you want to find a way to make a delicious French toast or a breakfast sandwich that still fits in with those goals, it's all about the Hero Bread. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your first order. Go to hero.co and use code LIKEMATT at checkout. That's LIKEMATT at hero.co. Because you can have your bread and eat it too. We talked recently about that episode where Carrie doesn't have enough money to buy her apartment and Charlotte eventually gives her her engagement ring to help her get the money. That one always strikes a nerve because it's such a relatable topic, because sometimes that paycheck just doesn't seem to come quick enough. But look, life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn can be in your hands today with Earnin'. Earnin' is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin' app, you verify your paycheck, then you access up to $100 a day as you work, leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I know I've got my husband's birthday coming up. I want to give him a nice gift. He's a man who likes the nicer things in life. So that's certainly how I would use the extra money I'd get from Earnin'. Download Earnin' today. It's EARNIN in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin' app, type in Just Like Matt under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. That's Just Like Matt under podcast. Earnin' is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Anymore?
Do I don't think so, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't think they have the fish tank model at Standard anymore, unfortunately.
I did love her getting in trouble for smoking all the time too. And that, like, I thought that was really, you know, I really, anyway, I'm going to state such the obvious, but I love Carrie.
I do too. I mean, I would never insult you by asking you to, like, put yourself in such a box. You know, are you a Carrie? Are you a Samantha? Are you?
That was the Daily Show bit. That was the Daily Show bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so we had three women, and there it was me trying to go. Every time they'd say, I go, which one are you? And I go, but I'm Carrie. Keep going. I'm Carrie. And I wouldn't let them. Yeah, and then we had a lesbian at the table who was like, I'm not represented at all. Anyway.
Well, sorry, isn't, and just like that, she's represented in the reboot. She'll be happy to know.
Oh, cool.
25 years later.
Right.
We get to that party. The girls are having drinks at the bar. They're all sort of in their own world. That's when Samantha meets dildo model. That's when Miranda meets the guy and realizes he's checking out. And Carrie is having drinks with her development executive, played by Sarah Michelle Gellar. And I don't know if you catch this when she's like, when Sarah Michelle Gellar's like, I have somebody to meet for that who wants to meet you. And she leans in to whisper his name, and she whispers Matthew McConaughey, but her mouth does not match.
Yes, it's something else. Yes, it felt like dubbed. I was like, something got, so they must have had a different actor that they couldn't do or something.
Yeah, I went down this whole rabbit hole. Yeah. They thought it was going to be Warren Beatty. When they were shooting that, they thought that he had signed on.
Wow.
And then at the last minute, I think it was Cindy Chu. One of the writers had to chase him down at a party. He was like, oh yeah, I don't know where the miscommunication was, but I was never considering doing this show.
Oh,
and they were like, oh, fuck it. They scrambled. But it worked out. McConaughey... perfect for it.
Yeah, I thought this. I noticed it too, Matt. I noticed when they, and because I always, of course, it's one of my joys again of adulthood is calling out things like that. And it was a little like I'm always judging that kind of stuff. So I could totally, when she did that, it felt like Matthew McConaughey. Like, where'd that voice come from? It felt really heavily in the. Yes, that was. And when she said, remember she mentioned, was it Jennifer Jason? Who was the first she guessed?
Yeah,
I thought
she guessed Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, and then she said Jennifer. Who'd she guess second? Jennifer
Love. She's gonna say Jennifer Love Hewitt. That's it. She doesn't really finish it.
Right. Yeah. That's who I thought was in that scene. I thought that's who that was for a second.
Oh.
That's how I know I'm such a grandma. I'm like, isn't that her? I'm like, no, they don't.
No, it makes sense because they starred together in I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Okay. All right. Is that
famously?
Why? The scene though, the thing that I was so obsessed with, I just thought that Miranda's thing with that guy was so amazing. How I've had that happen where someone's like, wow, you're really funny. Like, wow, you're really, and then not really because you're not sort of, I just had that this guy I went out with where he, this is going to mention sex. And I know that's kind of a tricky subject for you.
Please.
I know you're private about that kind of stuff on the podcast.
I am,
talk about it. But the
careful.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be really gentle. This guy who after we went out had a couple dates and then when we did sleep together he was like, wow, you are. I mean, this is just to brag how great I am in bed. <That's right. laughs> I'm just kidding. Sorry, but he was like, wow, you're so much more like. And he's like, I had no idea. You don't come up. I go, well, what do you mean? Like you like. Because I wasn't like, you know, sucking on my finger the whole time or something. I'm like, you're not supposed to walk around advertising it. It should be earned. Like, I'm not going to give it to anybody. Just for, and that was so, except it was so unsatisfying. No, I shouldn't jump to the end, right? Do you like to talk about it in like chronological? You're like, and then this scene.
Oh, listen, no, we'll go wherever you want to go.
Oh, just take your bras already off. Let's just do it. Let's go. It was so unsatisfying at the end, Miranda's sexuality, when she was like, now she's going to be sexual. And you could tell she was like, oh, I'm sorry. She still was not. I had this fear of like, oh no, would that be me too? Of just like, now Lauren, really go for it. Let's see your sexuality. And then they're like, you know what? Still not getting it. Let's have her shirt fly open. That'll give us some, and a red bra. Like, because otherwise she's not quite pulling it off. We're not seeing her be really, she didn't get more sexual. She just got more like, I'm on here. I better be sexy. Like, I was hoping that she would see her start to move, you know, like that her body would move or something.
Yeah.
But she still felt really uptight.
She still felt very Miranda.
Yes.
Did you ever ride the bull at Saddle Ranch?
No. I was just thinking about that the other day, how that was such a thing for girls to do. No, I never even went there. Was that on, is that a gay bar?
It doesn't seem like your scene. No, it's like a real straight bar right across the street from the Standard.
Oh.
If it's still there, I don't know.
And this is the Standard in Hollywood, not the downtown one.
On, yeah, right.
Right,
yeah,
okay, yeah. Sunset. Yeah, no, I've had some meetings there, but I've never gone to clubs. I don't go hang out on Sunset at the clubs. That's probably why I'm living there.
Shocking.
I know. This is also why I'm in a rent-controlled apartment. If I would have made a bit more of a play of things, I would have been so much further along. But yes. Yeah. Okay. So back to that scene. They're all in there. And I also had forgotten, because I hadn't seen the show for a while, how amazingly over the top Samantha is. I completely forgotten how every line. So like, I was like, damn, like I didn't notice it when I watched it before. I was like, I just loved, I loved her character so much. And then this time I was like, wow, she really is like, which is kind of amazing. It's like,
it really is. I'm sure you know she did not return for the new show.
Because they're mad at each other or something, right?
She's terribly missed. They're mad at each other. Right. The part of the reason I started this podcast was I thought I could single-handedly heal the rift, but it hasn't happened.
I don't want to, again, maybe there's a podcast of yours you can send me to, but I'm like, because I don't know what, I felt like the tension, you could feel it. And you watch now after doing so much TV, I've done so much television, but you can tell that people, the actors that get along and the ones that actually don't, and you're just hoping that it helps the character. And it really does help her that she is sort of, there's a cold, you can tell that they're like, there is, I thought at the very end, there's a line that Sarah Parker, she says to her, they're supposed to laugh together. Carrie's character and I'm supposed to, and it was such not a sincere laugh. It was so them like, aha. And the other times you could tell there's a little, they are entertained by their lines. They're enjoying what they're saying. And that, and even I thought, is that because I know what I know? I'm like, no, that was a really, like the two of them together, you could feel when they're trying to actually get along, when Samantha's not just like, oh, come, I will come. But
If Michael Patrick's listening to this, by the way, I'm sure his gears are turning about how we can bring Samantha back, maybe played by another actor in season 3.
Right. That's exactly. I would be beat up in the gay streets forever if I tried to take to play her, to have someone just like, it's me. I'm Samantha. Like, I don't remember her having that kind of chin. But yeah, they would never do that, would they? They wouldn't bring another. But I'm up for it.
No, they wouldn't.
Yes, and.
Of course. You know, when Carrie meets McConaughey, she's very, you know, she's awkward and having that experience. That, like, I mean, I on the rare occasion that I meet a celebrity, I find it hard to not float above my body watching the interaction, including when I'm talking to a Lauren Weedman.
I was hoping that was happening now. I was like, you seem too comfortable.
Of course. Yeah. I'm not present.
Yeah, I hope not. I was getting a little insulted because I thought we were like actually communicating. I'm like, this feels like friends. This is not good. Okay, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I just had
when
that.
That's my question. Like, when you meet some big giant star, are you able to have a normal human interaction?
It depends. I can fake it. And I just the other day was working with a big, I think I can say it because I can't say the project. They made me do all these, but I worked with, well, I don't have to use him. It's happened over and over again. I did a scene with Jessica Lange in a movie. And are you dying to know? But now are you wondering who the other person was that I didn't say?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
We can change the name in the dub like Sarah Michelle Gellar did.
Right, totally. Sir Ben Kingsley. And then if you could put in Warren Beatty, that would be great when I say that.
Perfect.
But so I did a thing. Yeah, I did just work with Sir Ben, which was... Yeah, it was. Oh wow, it was a moment where I was like, I'm with like the best of the in the like Laurence Olivier kind of shit, and then but I also work with Jessica Lange, and I'm talking about these are the two ones that are iconic in my head as well. So not just because I work with like Gene Smart, all these people that are big, you know.
Yeah.
But what I do with Gene, the same thing I did with Jessica is that in the beginning, I always am. I fake it. I just fake that I'm comfortable. I fake that I'm like, hi, oh my God, my shoes are so, and then I always know when to pull out now. I know like not to go too far. Don't talk too much about myself. Give them some space. Yeah. And then the thing that usually helps is if I compliment them, and then that will usually, if I sort of go out of myself and talk about them a bit, and I'm just faking, I just have like manipulative steps to get myself comfortable, you know? And I really, if I could make them laugh, it calms my nerves, but I'm nervous the whole time. And I think it takes more than, like, I worked with Jessica Lange for just one day. I never stopped. Every time I was looking at her, I was like looking at Jessica Lange, listening to Jessica Lange, listening, sitting down now next to Jessica Lange. It's, you're in your head the whole time, just like, and then I'll be thinking, I can't wait to tell everybody. Wait till I tell everybody. I'm going to tell everybody about that. Yeah. I can't tell everybody. So it calms down when I can just acknowledge, like with Jessica Lange, it did actually, it calmed down my nerves where I could really talk to her after I said, I know you've heard it a million times, but you are so fucking good. That's all. And then as soon as I said that, she relaxed too. There was something about her, not that she was tense, but they must also feel like, well, I was going to say they're people too. They go to Trader Joe's as well. But yeah, no, I don't have a system, but I do kind of have in fact, I pride myself on being able to be around. I'm like, put me in, I can handle them. I'm not scared, but I have a deep voice. So people think I'm.
that'll help. It does sound weirdly powerful. I guess it's disarming to finally just say point blank, like, wow, I know you know this, but you're amazing.
Yeah. I think it shows you're not putting on, if I'm able to be, this is it. If I'm able to be at all honest, if I can actually tell them what's really happening, it changes. Like when I, with the Sir Ben thing, I thought I was so fucking nervous with him. I'm like, I just have to accept that this job I'm doing right now, I'm not going to be very good. And as I was shooting it, I was like, it's okay. This will not ruin my career because my career, this isn't, I'm doing so many guest stars right now. It's not like all of a sudden I'm going to do less guest stars because of this. It's like, they're not expecting, guest stars don't have to be amazing. That's what I told myself. It doesn't matter. I won't be fired. I can get away with it enough because I was so nervous. Yeah. And then finally because I'm like, I don't know if I can sit across from him and not continually be blown away by the power that's coming out of him. And then I said, damn, I go, let me know if you're not getting what you need over there. Cause you know, guest star want to serve the story, serve the show or something like that. And as soon as I said that, and then he commented, said something nice back to me. He was like, you're fucking lovely. And then I was like, okay, maybe he's just saying that to me. No, I'm going to believe it. And then I said a couple other things of just about like working with him, like, okay, this is an amazing. And then as soon as I said what was really happening, you know, then that I wasn't just inside. And I feel like that's always a sign of a professional when they could actually go like, I'm so excited to meet you. They get geeked out about people.
You're blowing my mind now. And I'm sure that all the listeners, very relatable. Just anytime any of you are on set meeting a celebrity, just follow Lauren Weedman's advice.
That's all.
But there's something very true and there's something universal there about like being honest and being like vulnerable, but in normal human
vulnerable
way.
And knowing that you still got a grip on yourself, that you're not going to unwind and that you're not just like, hey, and sorry, and next break, can I ask you something? My mother loves you. Like they know like, okay, I've got a hold of myself. You don't have to worry about me. I'm not going to be a burden. I just want to say, but I remember on The Daily Show watching all these guys that came in and they all got hired. Like Ed Helms kissed John's ass so fucking juicy hard. He was like reading John's book before he went in for the audition, like put it down. And I was like, John's not going to like that. What a kiss ass. He's going to be like me. Act like you don't give a shit about John. Never show him your real feelings. And like, I'm fired within a year. And the rest of them have gone like, woo. And that because I thought it was uncool to show how much I liked him. I couldn't let myself enjoy it. I couldn't let myself go, this is so fucking fun. Like I'm here with this guy I love. Instead, I was like, I'm probably not supposed to be here. I'm in over my head. And I definitely have like learned that to show a little bit of like, to show a little bit of who you really are. Yeah. Anyway, okay. That's good.
Yeah. That's good.
That's good. That's good. I'm all
like. You mentioned.
I didn't mean to be so controlling.
You mentioned.
So,
yeah. No, I listen. It's good. You mentioned Carrie smoking and that is just this recurring thing. She can't smoke anywhere in LA. We're so obsessed with health and bodies here. And I say it often on this podcast. It's like Carrie smoking is just so aspirational and it's, I know it's wrong. Obviously smoking is bad and no one should do it. I know neither of us do, but if you are comfortable, safest of spaces here, when is the last time that you had a cigarette?
You think there's people that wouldn't want to admit when they smoked a cigarette? Are there people?
Yeah.
Really? Why? Why would somebody be like, can we talk about something else? I am a vegan. Like what I feel like, because it's like, it's such,
I don't know.
Now even smoking a cigarette is like such a bad thing to even admit that you're like, I don't want to go. Like it used to be, I would smoke if somebody.
Not to me. I'm very pro smoking is what.
Oh, I'd say you
I'm
love
saying.
Smoking. I get you. You're like, blow that smoke.
I just
face.
Can't do it.
Yeah. I can't do it either.
Yeah.
No, I can't smoke. I've smoked pot in my life as well. I'm very open about, I'm no Willie Nelson. I had to, or Snoop, but I stopped that because my lungs, it hurts my lungs. So now I have to gummy it up.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time I saw, and I was always a cigarette smoker, just out of just being around, I was theater, this, everybody lived in Amsterdam, rolling our own, being, and I just thought it looked, it felt cool. It felt good. And when I saw her smoke, I had such a like longing for that feeling of a time period. I felt my youth. I felt my life rushing. It felt so long ago, that smoke. It felt so nostalgic that it made me, I didn't realize how emotional the show is nostalgia wise, all that stuff. I'm like, wow, that time period of when I did watch that show and how and even clothing of thinking, about how, anyway, sorry, about a woman, like it does the idea of like spending money on clothes, mm-hmm. and actually having that kind of money to be like shoes. I never would buy expensive shoes ever. I only started when I was on Looking, on the show where I was making money, and I bought a couple of pairs of Jimmy shoes. And I remember thinking, oh, this is what the Sex and City thing is about. Cause it is really fun to have all the, to feel like you're fancy.
Yeah.
But I didn't, it was more of a longing. I definitely was not like that. But, smoking. Last time I smoked was when I was probably 40, and I think I mentioned I'm 79. So it's been a while, but it always made me feel nauseous. I did it anyway though, because I like,
sure, not, you powered through.
Oh, yeah, I'm not gonna let nausea or laws or surgeries or pregnancy get in my way of having a party. No, I'm kidding, but I but yet now I dated a guy who said he was going to that he after a couple of dates he was like, you should know that I'm a smoker. And I was like, I can't believe that you didn't tell me that ahead of time. I can't believe I drove here. I didn't say it to his face, but I'm like, as if he was a serial killer. I was like, that's disgusting. I'm not going to be around that. So yeah.
I see. I get excited when someone's smoking near me at like an outdoor restaurant or something. I get excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do you go to other cities? You see like back. Other towns in the world where they're still like in Portland or other places where people are, other cities where I'm like, whoa, like they're smoking over there. Is somebody on drugs? Like you assume it's some big trouble. They're smoking. When it's like, oh, that's right. People are still smoking. It's still there.
That's right.
When's the last time you smoked? You don't want to admit it.
I am going to have to edit this out. No, I probably 2 years ago had one. I have like one friend who always wants one if we're out having drinks.
Right, right.
I think I bumped one with her. Yeah, probably 2 years ago.
But didn't you like, I think the last time I smoked, I had to pull the car over while the nausea passed, where I was just like, why did I do that? I can't do that anymore.
Dude. Yeah. I just get like, a lung thing and like kind of heart palps. And
That's hilarious.
It's not cute.
Yeah, the lung thing.
The lung thing. Anything we haven't covered? I mean, Charlotte, not with us much in this episode. She's back in New York. She's trying to get a handle on Trey's.
I wanted to know about the ring of paper around the dick, around putting this whole thing where she was like, wants to see whether he's, first of all, Kyle MacLachlan, I'm sure this has been covered before, but I got such a wave of like, fuck, I love that guy. He is so in all of the great projects. He's so damn cute. And he's so damn like, he just does everything right. I'm sure he's done some bad projects, but man, do I like him. Anyway, what is it, the thing about putting paper around a dick, and if it breaks, is that a thing? Have you ever heard of that?
Never. This show is the only time, and every time, this is the one moment. There's so many moments that like bend reality in this show, but this is the one thing I could. I've never quite bought.
No.
That was a thing. No.
No, and also what a weird thing to even come up with. Like, did Michael come up with that? Like the idea that you're going to put these stamps around and that it's going to bust through the stamps as it gets in the middle of the night as it gets, that part.
Yeah, he's got to have a rock hard explosive erection.
Yes, yes. And then her waking up like, yay. I thought I wrote down the stuff that I was like, I'm like my notes. I was like I mostly was thinking of personal anecdotes because of my self-absorption.
That's what we want. Lay them on me.
That when I did a show with John Corbett, I was on United States of Terra, that show.
Oh, right.
Right.
Of course, yes.
And everybody was like, well, you know who he is. That's all people were. It wasn't even Northern Exposure. It was all like, he's from Second City. It's her boyfriend.
He's Aiden.
Yes. And I had to play. I was a guest star. But my scene was with him. And the whole time I was prepared not to like him because he was a Republican. I was very general back then.
Whoa.
What?
I didn't know this. Okay. And I've been defending Aiden for months. And this, that, okay. Sorry to interrupt you.
I don't know. Okay, let me go back in that he was with, he's married, his partner was super conservative. And that's everyone, Bo Derek.
Bo Derek.
Bo, we call her. And people, oh yeah, people were, even on the set, they were like, the makeup and hair people are all like, he's like, he's, you know, his partner's Bo Derek. And she's like, super conservative, super like, and at that time, this is before Trump. So it was like, you know, it seemed cute, but also like, well, that's weird. You'd think he'd be a bit more. And he was so like, during my scene, when it was my, when the camera's on me, he would, he was like, I'm going to sketch you, but I'm not going to look at my paper. I'm just going to look at you. And I was like, he's so flirtatious. He's so like, and then another point, he's like, let me see your, the first thing he said to me was like, let me see your tattoo. Let me see this tattoo. Like when men do that, when they're like, let me see that. Cause they're touching you. And like, where's that? And I remember I was like, oh my God, he's like, he's a dog. He a dog. And then at the end of our, where not the end of it, but in between, we had a break. And he was like, hey, and he talked to me every time. And this is not uncommon sometimes with like leading men types a bit, that they're very flirty. And you'll think like, they love me. I'm like, oh, wait a second. They want everyone to love them. That's where they're a leading man. It's because you do fall for them. They know how to like get you to, but he goes, hey, I'm going, he goes, I cut my finger yesterday. And, oh man, it was like pretty deep. And I just put a Band-Aid on it. And I don't even know if I did it. I'm going to go back to my trailer and take off the Band-Aid and see like if it's too deep. If I need to get stitches, like, do you want to come back with me? And I go, and I had a moment of like, come back to his trailer to watch him take off his Band-Aid. And I was like,
what?
I go, okay. And I was like, oh, okay. And I felt like I should, because he asked me or something. That's how dumb I was. And I was like, all right, so we're walking. I'm walking behind him. He's leading me to his trailer. And then a costume lady comes up next to me. And we're like, hi. And I said to her, because I was feeling, so I go, I'm going to his trailer. And she goes, because he's taking off his Band-Aid, right? I go, did he ask you too to go to his trailer? He took off his Band-Aid to show us. And she was like, yeah. And I'm like, wait a minute. I thought I was the one who wanted to show his Band-Aid taken off thing with. And then I peeled off because I'm jealous. I'm a possessive person. I was like, I wanted to see right. that. And that moment, I was like, again, I was, as it was happening, I'm like, I can't wait to tell everybody about how the guy from Sex and the City. And I never got to tell that story until. So thank you, Matt.
Oh, thank you. But God, what would have happened if you'd gone? Do you think he would have just taken off the Band-Aid?
I have no idea. It's happened to me, like Woody Harrelson too, was like, come back to my bus. Come to my bus. And everyone goes, you're going to get high with him. Go get high with him. And I always assume that everybody's trying to have sex with me just because.
Why wouldn't you?
I'm just kidding. But I'm such a, I think I've got such a prudy thing that I'm so like, the mailman's like, oh, Lauren, I missed you. And I'm like, what's he mean by that? And so every time if somebody's charming and they're cute and they're like, I'll think that like, what if, and then I get nervous, like I can't handle it. Like, what if something happened? When nothing was going to happen, I think they're just like being nice. I'm the nervous one who gets like, I can't be with you. Like, what if, I'd be the fattest person you'd ever had sex with, right? Aren't you married? Like, and they're like, literally, Lauren, we just wanted to come say hi. Just come hang out with everybody. And I'm thinking it's because they're after me because they're so charming. And I'm probably having, because I'm crushing on them. Mm. I'm assuming that it's about to. So that was, yeah, that's a embarrassing. I was like, cause. Oh, and then I have one more note, and that's frustrated sex.
Please.
Do people just do this? Like you get to just ask like four questions and then people just bowl over you and like, and there I was, Matt. Has that been your life on the podcast?
No, this is what I try to drag out of them.
Oh, yeah, to drag it.
This is how I want it to go.
Right, okay, just check. I mean, I don't need approval. I don't know why I sounded like that. It's Hollywood. I wasn't like this before I got here. Bald, sexy men, two guns, and kill ourselves. Oh, that joke I thought was like, when she was like, let's get two guns and kill ourselves. The car, sorry, that was a problem. Bullshit, and you know it. Mr. Big. God damn it. Oh, the Cosmo. I was remembering when I saw they're constantly in those Cosmo. I know this is such the thing of that show, right? Is that the martini glass?
Yeah.
How that suddenly so many different drinks were always in the martini glass because of that show. And my dad, who is in Indiana and big man, and he got into Cosmos during that time. And because he's, Lauren, have you ever had a Cosmopolitan? And I'm like, yeah, Dad, they're pretty popular in New York. And he loved them. And they're very good. And he had like palsy. You know, and not, it's okay. You don't have to worry. It wasn't like a, we all not laughed at him, but he would get a Cosmo. And then by the time the drink would get to his mouth, he would, sorry, he would have like had a tiny bit left in it because of the, I know it's awful. It's very sad. I shouldn't make fun of old people with palsy. But I remember I was like, Dad, ask to get the Cosmo in like a tumbler. And cause he, oh, I like the glass and it's all the slosh, 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 slosh. I'm like, damn you, Sex in the City. My dad can't get a full Cosmo. And then we were actually a breakfast place called Bob Evans, which is like a really,
oh,
do you know it?
Yes, I'm from Ohio. I know.
Oh,
it well.
You are. Okay, good. So he's, we're Bob Evans, and my dad, to the waitress, was like, I want to ask you, do you have a Cosmopolitan here? Can I get it? And I was like, and Bob Evans? He's like, well, I got beer the other night, so they're serving beer, which I also was shocked at, but he asked for a Cosmo.
Oh, yeah, I'm shocked by that.
Yeah, I know. And I may be remembering it wrong. I'm kind of a liar when it comes to that. If I can't remember, fill it in. That thing of that had such a flashback of my dad's, because he was such a big farmer kind of build of a guy, and watching him with those like very delicate glasses and thinking they're so good. Well, they really go down quick. And I'm like, they really do, don't they?
Wow. Did he watch the show?
No,
or it's just it, culturally, it just made its way to him.
Culturally.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had it somehow at a dinner and he thought it was so good. No, he didn't watch the show. Are you kidding? My dad's, he would like Murder, She Wrote had too many women in it. So it's
I don't know. It's not, he's no longer with us.
Yeah. He died. He did, but he died. Why do you think it has something to do with that?
But I was curious if you died by Cosmo. No, I was wondering if he was still around, like when you were on Looking.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. Hung was the one I was specifically wondering about.
You know,
dad watching you as Horny Patty.
Yeah. Having sex and stuff and like, naked. I don't know that he watched that. I don't believe he did. He was super. I mean, the first thing I thought after the Sir Ben Kingsley thing was I started about like my dad would be the one person who would love to hear this story because he loved Hollywood stories. That's the one good thing, right? It's like, well, I was always that source for my family of meeting these people and then reporting back. You know, like I met that person. Like she's in with the royal, like we're in the with the royal family of, or you know, the way we treat celebrities. And I've had so many different of working with so many different people, and to not have my parents to brag to or my dad, it really takes it like, what am I doing here then? Because he was the one that loved those. I mean, I didn't come out here to try to work with famous people. I mean, I've never been celebrity focused really. I like people, I like their work, but I've never been, you know, as whatever, not into celebrity stuff as much as some are, but that is sort of like one of the things about LA, right? That you're, I don't know, you must report back to your family too, right? Maybe.
Oh, 100%. Listen, my mom is visiting right now and I'm going to report back to her that I just got to Zoom with Lauren Weidman for a whole hour.
I wouldn't do that, Matt. I would tell her about something else. I'm not being, you know, false humble. Let her know that you met Michael Patrick King, who knows Jennifer Coolidge. Leave it at that.
No. She's going to be very impressed.
You tell Donna. Is her name Donna?
Evelyn, but Donna is the right energy.
Okay, good. Tell Evelyn, hey.
I will. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Matt. I'll see you in another 10 years when you do another look back.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkey. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.